Greetings, Hoopsheads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Thursday, May 31st. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. It's the first day of the finals. It's finally here. The moment we've been waiting for nearly a year, knowing that the Warriors were very likely to make it back to this spot yet again. It's very exciting. The series against the Cavaliers kicks off at 6 p.m. Pacific tonight at Oracle. We're going to talk all about that. We're going to spend two segments on it, most likely. And then in the third segment, I want to talk about something that Kevin Durant has been doing that's been really special for a specific group of people that I've worked with in the past. And that it's really touched my heart, this story. So stay tuned for that as well. You can get this podcast on iTunes, iOS, Google Play, Spotify, and LockedOnWarriors.com, as well as LockedOnSports.com, also on Facebook at LockedOnDubs, and LockedOnNBAnet. You can get in touch with me via Twitter at Koji Tare, K-O-G-I-T-A-R-E, or at Locked On Dubs. I tweet from both accounts. My written work can be found at Forbes.com. I've also written for BleacherReport.com. And you can check out all my credentials on LinkedIn, A-L-I-K-O Carter. I do also want to say I guest starred on the Locked On Wolves podcast to preview the series. It's going to be a two-part preview over the course of today and tomorrow. I had a great conversation with Colton Molesky at Locked On Wolves. He is absolutely fantastic. We chopped it up about the Warriors, about what to expect from them, what to expect from LeBron, about the fatigue that some NBA fans may be feeling at a fourth straight Warriors-Cavs finals. We really talked about a ton of things, so definitely check in for that podcast today and tomorrow. Also, make sure you're tuning in to Locked On NBA every single day. Locked On NBA has got everything you need to get prepared for this finals matchup. No Miles today. He's got some day job shit to take care of, so it's just me. Hope that's okay with y'all. To start, I want to look at the Warriors' three-point shooting over the course of the playoffs. It's been really up and down. Some high water marks, a 48.4 mark in a win over the San Antonio Spurs on April 16th. A low water mark also against the Spurs in the one loss. They went 7 of 28, that's 25%. I think the Warriors are going to need to shoot the three really well to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. Obviously, the Cavaliers are not the same team. They're not talented on the level that the Warriors are, but they're still one of the best teams in the league. The team that came out of the East, they have to be respected, and you have to knock down shots to beat good NBA teams. I think the Warriors need to take this matchup extremely seriously. I'm sure they are going to take the matchup very seriously, but I think as far as shooting is concerned, they need to spring people open rather than rely on the one-on-one to get those good shots. You gotta, like, there's a big difference between somebody receiving a pass, still well guarded, pump faking, moving over, and taking the step away, and someone like doing a move off the dribble to create a three-pointer. We love it when Stephen Curry does that. Kevin Durant, not quite as much. Klay Thompson obviously doesn't have too many unassisted three-pointers, and when he does hit an unassisted three-pointer, it's kind of like, it's cool. We like that. But I think I'm specifically talking about Kevin Durant here. We need to create shots, and he was so good in Game 7 creating shots on his own. Like, I don't want to say that he was detriment to what the Warriors were trying to do. I just think that in order, like, I just want to avoid shooting 25% from three. May 8th, GSW versus Pelicans, 7 of 27, that's 25.9%. May 22nd versus Houston, 9 of 27, that's 33%. Versus Houston again, this is another loss. May 16th, 9 of 30. There's a correlation here. Is it that the teams are playing better defense, the Warriors are missing shots? Probably a little bit of one, a little bit of the other. But when the Warriors shoot below 34% or so, there's only one game in the playoffs that they won. That was May 8th versus the Pelicans. And that was a close one. Obviously, there's plenty of correlations to be found. Turnovers, getting out rebounded. But if they don't knock down the shots that are their bread and butter, they're more likely to lose. And that's because they get outscored in the paint by nearly every team. They were doubled up in the paint by the Houston Rockets in Game 7. 56-28, they still won by 9 points, and that was because the three-point shooting was incendiary. They went 16 of 39, that's 41%. Great mark for a game. And it's right around, you know, I think they shot 39% from three for the season. So if they can get above 40% in any game, I think it gives them a really good chance to win. And it makes for very exciting basketball, especially at Oracle, getting the crowd ignited, but also at the Cue, quieting the crowd, which Stephen Curry loves to do. Moving on, we know Andre is out for game one. We know that he's a glue guy who really smooths out the rough edges that these Warriors have. Is he still the Warriors' best option on LeBron? We're not sure. We know that the Warriors are going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at LeBron. And we know that the switching schemes are going to dictate that everybody on the court is going to guard him at least at some point. But Kerr said Draymond, KD, I'm assuming Andre when he gets back, Looney, and also Klay Thompson will get turns on LeBron, just to make sure that he doesn't get used to just one scheme, one defender. I think that's really smart. Obviously, a very simple decision to make. You know, either you're going to have one guy guard him, you're going to have a bunch of guys guard him. But like I said, switching means that everybody's going to guard him anyway. And you can expect the Warriors to continue to switch everything. You can expect the Cavaliers to continue to switch everything. That is what has happened to the NBA over the course of the last few years with these positionless lineups the Warriors pioneered, and the ability of LeBron to play every position. You know, starting Kevin Love at center, maybe he will be ready for game two. We'll see. He's still in the concussion protocol. But starting Kevin Love at center, a lifelong power forward, Tristan Thompson, who can move his feet pretty well, more of a power forward than a center. And then you've got Jeff Green, very versatile, can do a lot, can guard bigger players, can play out on the perimeter. And with the Warriors, obviously, we've been through this ad nauseum. The Warriors are created to switch everything. The smallest player, Curry, is often hidden, but he's hidden on a larger player. He played Trevor Ariza a ton in the Western Conference Finals, and Ariza's got easily 5 inches on Curry. Curry is used to playing against bigger players. Now, is he going to be able to guard LeBron? Absolutely not. But if you put him out there, will he hold his own? Absolutely. Will he play the passing lanes well? Yeah. Will he use his body to block, to wall off the path to the rim? Yes. Will he get beaten? Occasionally, he will. That's the price of being a small player who's not incredibly fleet-footed. But at the end of the day, is he a minus defender? No. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of the break. So the defensive scheme is to throw everything at LeBron. Obviously, the Warriors are going to have their rotations on point. I think they rotate better than any team in the league, honestly. And I think that the Cleveland Cavaliers have trouble rotating, and the Warriors are going to be able to get open shots off of ball movement. But on the defensive end, it's important to stay in front of your man. It's important to rotate as quickly as possible because LeBron is that good, basically. Because LeBron can drive to the rim, turn around in midair, and swing the ball across the court to an open three-point shooter, as he does repeatedly. The people on the defense for the Warriors are going to have to rotate to open shooters. I want to talk about the play of the Big Four a little bit. I talked about the role players in the Locked On Wolves podcast. Like I said, definitely go check that out today and tomorrow. But, I didn't spend a lot of time talking about Curry, Thompson, Durant, and Green. I want to start with Draymond Green. Draymond is going to have the biggest load defensively on his hands of probably his entire career. He's going to be counted on to guard LeBron one-on-one, and when he's not on LeBron, he's going to have to be a roving guy, curtailing dribble penetration, protecting the paint from the LeBron, Tristan Thompson or whoever, pick and roll, contesting shots off rotations, and of course boxing out, grabbing rebounds, pushing the ball offensively, not settling for the three-point shot and getting those assists and hockey assists. The biggest thing for Draymond right now is to not turn the ball over. He's had trouble with turnovers this postseason. The Warriors have gone up and down. They have had a few games, including some games against the Houston Rockets where they recorded 12 or 13 turnovers. Very good sign that they really can lock in, take care of the ball. Because there were some times where, you know, especially, you know, against the Rockets and a couple of games, some that they won, some that they lost, where they were just inexplicable turnovers. Turnovers that ended up in the hands of Rockets and they weren't even playing the passing lanes that well. Turnovers that ended up in the second row of the arena. But I want to get to LeBron as well, because LeBron is going to have to continue his greatness to even have a chance against this team. The Warriors obviously are much more talented. I believe talent wins out in the NBA. I believe that the Warriors are going to win in six games. Colton Molesky thinks that they are going to take it in five, which I believe has a pretty high probability of happening. But at the same time, I just give LeBron credit for being able to win games on his own. And I think that there's going to be at least one game in Cleveland where the Cavs supporting cast comes to play. I think Kevin Love is going to be a factor once he gets off concussion protocol. The Cavs don't have another player quite as dynamic as Love outside of LeBron James. He's going to be huge. And not just because he's a big guy, but because he can back players down. He can get buckets on his own, but he can also get fed from the at the three-point line and get hot. He has the ability to knock down seven or eight three-pointers in a game. We've seen it happen before. And he's a few years removed from a 26-13 season with the Minnesota. Well, a few years. He is, 4 years removed now, because it's been 4 years since they acquired him for Andrew Wiggins for the most part. But the season prior to that, he averaged 26-13 for the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves didn't make the playoffs, but it was basically Kevin Love. And so he showcased in that season the ability to do a ton of different things, the creativity around the rim, the footwork, the ability to shoot. Since then, he's lost weight. He moves more quickly. He's gotten better at defense. I think he's going to be a factor if he is able to play early on in this series. As I said yesterday, I think that Nick Young is going to be a factor, especially in lineups out there with Klay Thompson, two like-sized players who can light it up from three. If Draymond is out there with them, then that threat is real. Draymond's so good at finding angles, getting the pass right in the shooter's pocket, and making sure that his teammates have the best possible chance to knock down the shot. Curry's play is going to be integral. Obviously, they're going to throw a lot of bodies at Curry. They're going to try to make him tired offensively. They're going to try to make him tired defensively. He's just going to have to dig deep, which we've seen him be able to do. I mean, he was targeted repeatedly. Having to guard James Harden, obviously, LeBron James is a different story. Likely, Curry will start on George Hill with Klay on J.R. Smith, but switching dictates that Curry will guard Smith, that he will guard guys like Kyle Korver, that he will guard, even be sought out by guys like Jeff Green and even LeBron. So he's going to have to hold his own and count on his teammates to be there for him when things get really hairy. Klay Thompson, play good defense, knock down three-pointers. It's pretty simple, but he's also gotten so much better in the fast break. We love seeing him get out there. No more clay-ups. Clay-ups are way in the distant past. We love that. And he's just got to be locked in, play every possession with attention to detail. As for Kevin Durant, you know, I mean, just keep doing what you're doing, bro. Don't rely too much on the three-pointer, especially unassisted three-point attempts. I think that that has shot him in the foot, that he shot himself in the foot in the past by relying on the three-pointer, shooting 11, 12, 13 three-pointers in a game. I mean, he's an incredible shooter. I don't want to take away from how good he is at shooting from long range, but he can do so many other things that I think it's really easy for him to settle. It feels like settling. And defensively, just uses length. He's a bona fide rim protector and can hold his own on the perimeter as well. He has to focus defensively. I think he needs to grab more rebounds than he's been grabbing in the past. only had 5 in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, I just think he can do better. I really do think he can do better rebounding the ball. You know, you don't necessarily, like, team rebounds are a thing. If you're around the ball and somebody else picks it up wearing your colors, that's fine. But part of rebounding is boxing out, which Draymond has done extremely well. Kevin Durant, not quite as well. Part of rebounding is positioning. And often KD is not in position. Every now and then he'll shoot a shot short and not follow his shot. That's one thing I don't like that I see from the Warriors is, you know, they're good enough shooters that I think they feel like I know when my shot is short when I shoot a basketball. And, you know, it's just, it takes a little bit of energy to follow your shot. That's one of, like, that's basketball 101. You definitely want to get back on defense. Obviously, Steve Kerr is not prioritizing offensive rebounds, but just on shots that are short, follow your shot. It's that simple. I'll catch you on the other side of this break. We'll talk about Kevin Durant investing in Limebike, which is helping formerly incarcerated people to rebuild their lives, and I'll explain how. All right. I don't know if anybody here has ever, you know, ridden one of those city bikes or Ford Go bikes or whatever. There's a company called Limebike that is trying to do something similar. And they also have scooters and other things, and they've become very popular here in San Francisco, in the Bay Area as well. They're dock free, so they don't have like docks. You just find them on the streets. E-assist bikes, pedal bikes, and e-assist scooters that move on their own. And riding is like you find a bike on your app. You unlock it with your phone, and you park wherever a bike is allowed. Like, it's really simple. So it's come out that Kevin Durant has invested heavily in Limebike, and that has made a difference in the lives of people who've had some tough goes, maybe made a few mistakes, but are now responsible for maintaining the Limebike system. So KD has invested in a ton of companies since he moved to the Bay Area via the Durant Company, and he's one of the investors in Limebike, which is a bike sharing app that's expanding across the United States. It already has 400 bikes on the ground in Washington, D.C., which is where KD is from. And KD is one of a group of investors that raised $50 million to help Limebike expand last year. Lime bikes are visible in San Francisco and Oakland. They're all over the place. Bikes, scooters, stuff like that. So I want to talk about how this relates to former convicts. And I used to work for a company, a nonprofit that operates around the country called Center for Employment Opportunities. It uses a four-step process, folks who are coming out of jail to the point where they can be self-sufficient. It's about getting jobs. 90% of all parole and probation violations are committed by people who don't have employment. So what CEO does is brings these folks in, teaches them life skills, provides them with immediate transitional employment through a public sector partner while training them to be able to interview for full-time work. Then they get placed in full-time work, and that's where Limebike comes in. Limebike is one of the companies that is working with CEO to employ its participants. And that's big. It's big because for the most part, it's really hard to get a job once you've been in jail or prison. It's big because these men and women do have skills that they can bring to the table. A lot of them, and there's about 50 placements here in the Bay Area in Oakland and San Francisco, full-time jobs paying $23 an hour. They're mechanics making sure that the scooters are operational. There are people working to make sure that they know where the bikes are at all time, make sure the bikes are accessible to everyone who wants to ride them. But yeah, dozens of people who've been employed by Limebike, thanks in part to the investment that Kevin Durant made into the company to allow it to expand. With that money, people are getting second chances. CEO is already talking to Limebike about its sites in New York, Los Angeles, and Dallas. CEO operates in nearly 20 sites around the country, making sure that the urban areas with the highest numbers of formerly incarcerated individuals are being served. CEO has been proven by an independent, randomized, controlled trial to reduce recidivism by up to 22% across all metrics, including reoffense, rearrest, and reincarceration. It also saves taxpayers money that would otherwise be funneled into the prison system. Limebike, for their part, is thrilled with their partnership with CEO so far, and I think that's something Kevin Durant should be really happy about. So I just wanted to add that in there in this last segment. Just make sure that you all knew of this latest example of how Kevin Durant's investments are making a difference in the community. I used to be a grant writer for CEO. I still write grants for a ton of nonprofits these days. That's my day job shit, or at least a portion of it. And I will say it's really hard to continually be seeking funds. And CEO is one of the, I donate to CEO every year. CEO is one of the most influential organizations in the battle against mass incarceration. I believe in CEO, and if you're considering making a donation before the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, I'd suggest that you make a tax-deductible donation to the Center for Employment Opportunities. Thank you for listening. Go Dubs, let's go. It's the finals. I'm pumped. I hope you are too. Stay thoughtful, Hoops heads.